You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio, streaming on the web at kgvm.org. In this last Friday Forum of the season held at the Bozeman Public Library and hosted by Wonderlust on May 18, 2018, Brendan Wiener, a program director of the Gallatin Valley Land Trust and First District Gallatin County Commissioner Don Seifert, discuss the Gallatin County Open Lands Program. What is it and how does it work? Just what are conservation easements? What about the open space levy on the June ballot? And what are the differences between open space bonds and a levy? Eva Patton introduces Brendan Wiener.
Today, we have a great program. There's been a lot of interest in open lands, and we started this because GVLT is presently working on their strategic plan, looking at areas in the Gallatin Valley that are good areas for outreach for conservation easements due to the agricultural potential, wildlife corridors, wildlife areas, and that. And Brendan Wiener is going to be talking about what they're doing there and how they go about their process, which is pretty amazing, I think. So we'll get a real nice background on how it goes from a nonprofit organization. And there are other nonprofits like Trust for Public Land or Montana Land Reliance that do conservation easements also. And then we're going to switch and we'll hear from our county commissioner, Don Siebert, and he will be talking about a little bit of the history of what the money that has come in from the bonds has done in the past, how the setup is at the county, and who decides how the money is spent from the county's perspective, and look forward to what's the difference between a bond issue and a levy, and talk about the levy that is coming up right now to vote on. So we will welcome both of them and let them take it from there.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me here today. Thanks, Eva, for that great introduction. My name is Brendan Wiener. I'm a program director at the Gallatin Valley Land Trust based here in Bozeman. I'm here today to talk about the work that GVLT does in our community here, focusing primarily on the land conservation work that we do, and also here today to talk about the Open Lands Program that has been in existence in Gallatin County since about 2000, and to discuss some of the work that that program has accomplished over the years. So what I thought I'd do is just give you sort of some background and introduction to GVLT, a description of how we work, a description of a little bit of background on conservation easements and what they are, since that's the main tool that we use to protect and conserve properties through the Open Lands Program. So a little bit of background on the ins and outs and the nuts and bolts of conservation easements. And then also, I will touch on a strategic conservation plan that we are updating currently. It's our document that helps to identify our priority resources throughout Gallatin County and our larger service area, and helps us to guide our conservation work so that we're being strategic, we're protecting the lands that have those really special conservation values. And then I will turn it over to our commissioner here, and he will then talk a little bit more about the Open Lands Program from a county commissioner perspective and how that program works. Our mission is to protect the natural and cultural resources that we have here in Gallatin County and beyond in our surrounding counties as well. As a community, we hear from people a lot about how much they care about this place and how special this place is. Our mission as an organization is to try to protect those resources that exist in our valley that our community feels so strongly about and wants to have going forward. The history of the valley and our agricultural history here is really important to a lot of folks. Our future is important to all of us. So some of the programs that we have for land conservation, as well as trails, look towards protecting those special qualities for future generations. Gallatin County is growing at a really rapid rate, and with all that growth comes a lot of challenges. And land here in the Gallatin County is being developed at a much higher rate than a lot of the rest of the state, and it's ranked pretty highly as far as development pressure on a national scale as well. That's our challenge right now, is trying to balance this growth with conservation of those special places and the special resources that make this place so special and that we all value so much. A little background on GVLT. We have a two-pronged mission. One is private land conservation, and the other one is community trails. Today, I'm going to focus mostly on the private land conservation side, and our main tool for that part of our program are conservation easements, which I'll get into in a little bit, but it's a tool to protect open lands. We also work with the city of Bozeman and Gallon County, the state, on trails and trail connections and trailheads and public access around our county as well. And so that's another part of what we do. And they do overlap in the middle there quite a bit. And when we can, creating new public access for trails, for hunting, for fishing, for bird watching, for just being able to access the landscape are where our programs overlap. So for land conservation, just starting at the basics, why are we looking at private land and why do we want to protect private land? And I have a couple of maps that I'll show you in a few minutes, but if you look at, you know, large maps of our region here, what you'll see is large blocks of public lands, mostly, you know, in the Bridger Mountains, in the Gallatins, up high in the mountains. Where the public lands aren't is down in the valley bottoms, along rivers, in between large blocks of public lands. And those are all private lands. And those are all really critical lands to the community for a variety of reasons, which I have up here. And that includes protecting the scenic and rural landscape that we get to enjoy every day. Some of our best soils and our best farmlands are in the valley bottoms. They all are. They're not on mountaintops. And so identifying where those farmlands are and trying to protect those and keep them in agricultural production for local foods and the agricultural industry is important. Wildlife. Having those large blocks of public lands is great for wildlife, but they need to be able to move between those large blocks of public lands. And in the winter, a lot of, you know, the elk and mule deer and other animals come down out of the mountains because of the snow. And where they go is the fringe areas on the outskirts of the valley that are privately owned and highly developable for residential purposes. And so we look to find those areas that are really important for winter range and wildlife in the winter and keeping those corridors and connectivity open so that wildlife can move around the landscape, which they need to do to have healthy populations and find the different sort of types of vegetation they need. Rivers and creeks, highly valued from the community level, also an economic driver for our region, for fishing and tourism, really important to agriculture as well. So, you know, we touch on those issues. And then recreation too, creating opportunities for all of us to get out and enjoy our beautiful landscape. This is a clipping from our first conservation easement, which was closed in 1991. Gertrude Baker on the right there and Chris Boyd on the left. Gertrude owned a piece of property which is up in Chestnut. It's where the Chestnut Mountain Trailhead currently is. She saw moose, elk in her property all the time and felt really strongly that before she left that property, she wanted to make sure that that habitat would be there forever. And so she worked with Chris Boyd, who is the founder of GVLT, on a conservation easement that protects 181 acres right at that Chestnut Mountain trailhead. And that trail, incidentally, has been there for a long time, but then years down the road, there was another project that created a permanent trail easement across that private property, which gets you into the Forest Service land up there. And then up to the top of Chestnut Mountain. So a great project, really sort of exemplifies both the land conservation piece as well as, you know, a public benefit for trail access on that one. So getting into conservation easements, this is our primary tool that we use to protect these lands. And so give you a sense of what they are and how they work. They're really legal agreements. They're voluntary legal agreements with willing landowners. They're not regulatory. Landowners approach GVLT and say, you know, I'm interested in protecting my land, and we work with them to draft these contracts, essentially, that the landowner grants development rights to the property to the land trust, which are then extinguished through the conservation easement. So it's a legal tool. It's a perpetual tool. So it runs with the land, meaning that if you put a conservation easement on your property, and, you know, 30 years later you decide to sell your property, that conservation easement stays in place. So future owners of that property have to adhere to the terms of that conservation easement. So if it allows for, in Gertrude's case, one house on 181 acres, future owners of that property are still only allowed to build just that one house in that same place, thereby protecting the rest of the property and keeping it as open space. Easements are customized. Each property is different. Each landowner is different. We have easements on properties as small as 10 or 12 acres that have some sort of special value, up to easements on properties that are 10,000 acres in size. And so the easements are a flexible enough tool to account for the different management practices and needs of the families. And that's helpful because we can work with the landowners to really try to capture their vision through the easement and then, you know, set it in a perpetual nature through the easement. All easements do limit development and subdivision. The idea is to keep open lands open and to keep them unfragmented. The owner retains title to the land and they can sell. If you put an easement on your property, you're limited in your development to what the easement says, but you can sell it on the market and you can give it to your kids and you can pass it on to others. So the owner retains title and they also retain management control, day-to-day management control. Really, the easement's purpose is to just confine that development to a certain area and prevent subdivision of the parcel. Easements came about back in the 1970s. They're really based in private property rights. And so again, this is not a regulatory tool which is being imposed on a landowner, but in these in easements, landowners are deciding that they want to see their property stay open. They would have the right to develop the property if they wanted to, but they're choosing to extinguish those development rights, or most of those development rights. And that's a decision made by a private landowner, which is their vision for the property. And so it's a part of easements that is really puts the power with the landowner and in those private property rights. They're not eminent domain. That's, you know, a government taking of property for public benefit, for increasing roadways, schools, things like that. Easements aren't that. They're not wilderness necessarily. Easement terms allow the landowner to decide on the impact. Typically in the easements we have around here, traditional uses like farming and ranching and hunting, some cases forest management and logging as well are allowed. There are some wilderness easements that do exist as well that don't allow much human impact on the properties. Public access is a right that the landowner keeps, so they can decide to allow public access on conservation easement properties, but easements typically don't require that, although some projects do have it, like the Chestnut Mountain example. It's not a property tax cut. There's no real change in property taxes because of easements. Also, you know, easements are specific tools for certain properties and certain people. They certainly don't fit every property or every landowner, and so they don't work for everyone. It's up to the landowner and the land trust to some extent to decide where easements make sense and where they don't. So what does a landowner get out of putting a conservation easement on their property? They have assurance that, you know, the resources on the property are protected forever. So whether those be prime soils or elk calving grounds, they can know that when this property transfers to the next generation or the next owner, those areas will be protected. It ensures stewardship of the land, and that's in part because of usually excellent management by the easement landowners, but also a partnership with the land trust that the landowner chooses to work with. And we have at GVLT a really strong land stewardship program, and we're able to help landowners with irrigation improvements, grazing plans, wildlife habitat enhancements, fencing, streams, things like that. We make an effort to really try to enhance those conservation easement lands. It's a way to keep land in the family, and it ties into with legacy and estate planning. A lot of times if large ranches transfer to the next generation, there can be serious and large tax liabilities associated with that, which sometimes forces the next generation to have to sell off chunks of their land or the whole thing sometimes just to pay the taxes on the generational transfer. Easements can help alleviate some of that. And then financial benefits. There's really two sort of primary types of financial benefits available to landowners through conservation easements. One is tax benefits, so they can get a federal tax deduction if you grant a conservation easement on your property. And the way that it's determined how much that is through an appraisal process where an appraiser actually puts a real dollar figure on the value of those development rights that the landowner has given up. The other component is sometimes there's programs that exist, like the Open Lands Program here in Gallatin County, that can provide cash funding for a portion of the easement value. There's a dollar value that's put on the conservation easement through an appraisal process, and there are programs that exist like the County Open Lands Program and some other programs where we can apply through a grant application to receive some funding to put towards purchasing that easement. In the county situation, easements are never purchased at 100% of their value. Landowners are always donating usually about half to three quarters of the easement value itself. So landowners are fully in the game as far as property values go, and the funding exists to help get them to the table and meet them halfway in doing these conservation projects that do benefit the larger public. So just touching on the Open Lands Program, it was created in 1998 by an Open Lands Task Force that was created by the Gallatin County Commission at the time. Bonds were then passed in 2000 and 2004 to support the program. The results are, 50,000 acres have been conserved through the program since 2000. The county dollars have been matched at a 5-to-1 rate, and that includes federal dollars to match and landowner donations. In addition to great farm and ranch lands and wildlife habitat, there's also been some really nice park projects that have come out of the Open Lands Program, including the County Park, the Big Sky Community Park, Chestnut Mountain, and North Cottonwood Trailhead, just to name a few. I did want to present a little bit on this conservation plan that we're doing. It gets into a little bit more of the details of how we sort of direct our program and what areas we focus on. And that seemed like it would be great information for this group to have, and just gets you sort of to a little bit to the next level of what this program looks like. So GVLT has a strategic land conservation plan. The last comprehensive one was written in 2006. Every 5 years or so, we do a small revision. And since we're about 10 years out now, we're sort of looking at a larger revision to the conservation plan. And it makes sense, this timing, because our county is changing really fast and growing really quickly. And GVLT really tries to be strategic in where we do our work and how we do our work. And this plan will be our guiding document for what that looks like. And we just started the update a few months ago. We have a lands committee that we work with that's a mix of GVLT board members and community members who have a lot of experience with land planning and environmental planning. And so we're halfway through at point, so it's not finalized by any means, but I did sort of just want to at least give you some background on what the process looks like and where we're headed. And so this just kind of gives you the basic layout of what we're trying to do. We have our conservation goals, where are our best areas for habitat, farms and ranches, those sorts of things, and identifying those areas within our region. And then we look to create an implementation strategy of where are those acres, who are those landowners, what are the outreach strategies to communicate with landowners who might be interested in participating in the programs. We use a lot of data, and there's tons of geographic data that exists out there that helps us to analyze where the priority lands are. And some of those categories, are up here, wildlife values, and that would be where wildlife corridors exist, and calving grounds, and unique habitat. Agricultural soils, there's great maps of where the best farmland soils exist in the county. And so for our farmland protection goals, how do we try to get those landowners interested in conservation projects to protect those soils? Water, rivers, creeks, wetlands, there's data out there for all these things. Scenic value, not as much data about that. We ask people where those scenic landscapes are, and sometimes they're big, wide open mountain range landscapes, and sometimes they're that ranch on the corner on the way to a trailhead that's been there for 100 years and is getting developed around it and just is so valuable to people. And then proximity to protected land is something we also look at. Certainly have a guiding principle of trying to create blocks of conserved lands, and that really makes sense for wildlife being able to move around and utilize different parts of the landscape. And it also makes sense for agricultural operations who need to have roads that they can drive tractors on and neighbors that they can count on for borrowing tools and infrastructure such as tractor dealerships and those sorts of things, that they need to have a base of land that is workable and operational. So we do look at trying to protect blocks that are close to each other. And then we look at threats, residential development and conversion of agricultural lands to residential properties, fragmentation, subdivision of large parcels, and then ecological threats such as invasive species and then climate change as well. See the Bridger Mountains, and then to the south there's Gallatin Mountain Forest Service, so public lands. Some of the light blue is state lands, but what I want to point out is the orange parcels on there are all easements held by GVLT, and then brown are other easements held by other land trusts that work in the area, such as the Nature Conservancy and the Montana Land Reliance work around here as well. And so the orange and the brown are currently conservation easements that exist. Those natural resources that are meaningful to us as a community that we want to protect. And so first thing, you know, is rivers. So, you know, we have our three major rivers here in Gallatin County, and then plenty of tributaries that feed into those corridors of habitat, water, and recreation, and really are sort of, you know, the backbone of our region here. And I'm zoomed into the Gallatin Valley, but I do want to note that this is only a portion of the service area that GVLT serves. We add to that data on, this is a wetland and riparian layer. So these are those habitats that floodplain areas, important bird areas, important areas for other wildlife as well, rare vegetation, things like that, follow the rivers because this is where our water is, and where the water is, there's more diversity of wildlife and vegetation. So that's another layer. And that's a winter range for elk and deer, like I was talking about before, and you can see it sort of hugs the foothills, really, and it's those non-forested grassland areas that are on the edge of our public lands and our forests. And those are areas that are limited in scope. There's only so much of them, and they're also highly developable because they are non-forested and they have good views and they're high-value residential properties. So already you can see there's a lot of data on here, and it's hard to sort of make sense of it all. And through this is our goal through this conservation plan, is to see where these overlap and identify those areas of the county that have the most value for resources. Another thing we look at is soils. And so again, green is Forest Service, the orange are GVLT easements, and the brown are other land trust easements. And the soils are those blues and greens underneath. And so this is a map of prime soils in the Gallatin Valley. So you can see Bozeman down there on the east side, Belgrade, Manhattan. You can see the triangle. So what to notice about this is the darkest blue there are best soils. Those are classified as prime soils by the NRCS. And so you can see where those are in our area here. And, you know, there's a lot in the triangle, which is where a lot of development's happening, but there's a lot outside the triangle as well. And you can see this orange block here is really trying to protect those best farmland soils that we have in our Amsterdam Churchill neighborhood, west of the Gallatin River there, farther out, the Gooch Hill area as well is another area of really good soils and good farmland. So, you know, this gets you to sort of where we've been working in the past as an organization, trying to identify where those high-quality resources are and gearing our projects and working with landowners in those areas to protect those. Is soils of statewide importance. The dark green are soils of local importance, and the lighter green are prime if irrigated soils, so they require irrigation to produce at a certain level. A good sense of what we're looking at when we try to decide where to focus our resources. We have three pending projects with the Open Lands Program that got allocated money through the program last year. They haven't closed yet, but they are in process, you know, where we continue to focus our work. And this is really sort of the prime farmland component of our conservation program. Building on that block, again, like protecting large blocks of ag lands, and then also down in the Gooch Hill area is a beautiful property close to those other easements and also surrounded by agricultural properties. I just wanted to just drive home the point of the Open Lands Program a little bit and how important it is to the work that we've been able to do here. And one of those reasons is that it allows us to use the county dollars as a match for other funding programs. And so you've probably heard that the county dollars have been matched at a 5-to-1 rate, which is an amazing leverage for it. And I just wanted to sort of drive home how important it is to protecting these. So it is a large majority of those easement projects we've completed have used this open lands program. And some use the program just to cover transaction costs to get the easement closed, and then some utilize it to match other funding programs and provide a higher purchase price for the landowner for those easements. Our next step is just circling back, and these are just project areas we have that just sort of try to describe our valley and then beyond this as well, and try to break down the valley into certain areas. And then we're going to the areas, and this one just happens to be Mount Ellis, which is kind of a small part of the valley. These are the kinds of things we're looking at, and this would be our resource map with our waterways on there. The light green are those wetland and riparian areas, and the purple crosshatch are those elk winter range. The light blue is state land, and just trying to get a sense of where the best conservation area is in that project area. And then also looking at the development threats to that area. And so you'll see all those dots are structures that currently exist. And the white lettering is the zoning out there. So there is a zoning district in that part of the county. There's actually two, it splits them. And trying to understand what the development potential is and what the development threat is in those areas. And that helps us to focus on those areas that have the highest resource values and have the highest risk of development into non-agricultural or non-resource properties. Some of the findings that we have so far from our process is that we have been pretty successful in focusing on certain areas. We're seeing a lot of conversion to residential development, but the focus areas we have are shrinking because the edges are getting fragmented and subdivided and turned into residential development. Funding and the Open Lands Program has been a huge benefit to the pace of conservation in our county and in our region. And a lot of the projects you saw on those maps would not have gotten done without the Open Lands Program and other matching programs. And we think a lot about coordinating conservation and growth. Growth is happening here. We're a growing community. It's going to keep happening. And that's, I would argue, a good thing for our community. And the goal is to work with our county and the city and our towns and cities around our area and really think about where it makes sense to grow and where it makes sense to not grow to protect those resources. And so more and more we're connecting with our partners and thinking about those things. Challenges that we faced are the pace of development, subdivision of large parcels. Easements, again, are a voluntary tool. They're not a regulatory tool. We need willing landowners. And that's key to any conservation program we do is working with landowners who have that vision, who want to protect their properties. Funding is a challenge and keeping the programs moving forward. We have a lot of momentum. There's a lot of folks interested in conservation, and we want to capitalize on the momentum. This is what we're looking for is the next generation, really, and trying to keep this special place and those special areas within our community here and protected and available for future generations. That's all I have for today.
That was Brendan Wiener, a program director with the Gallatin Valley Land Trust. Next, we hear from the First District Gallatin County Commissioner, Don Seifert, speaking about the mechanics of the Gallatin County Open Lands Program, which came into existence in 2000, funded by two separate bonds, which have now expired. A levy to continue funding the program is on the June ballot. He explains the differences between a bond and a levy. County Commissioner Don Seifert.
I'm Don Seifert. I'm one of the Gallatin County Commissioners. Thanks for having me here today. I get to talk about a couple of things that I really, really love, and one of them is Gallatin County. It's a great place. I was born and raised up in North Montana, up along the High Line. If you travel I-15, when you drive north out of Great Falls, you go through a little town called Conrad, and on the way to Shelby, and you cross the Marias River. Right before you get to the Marias River, there's a road called the Bullhead Road. As I jokingly say, that's the Bullhead Road with two L's, not two T's. And if you look about 4 or 5 miles to the west, I was born and raised on a 6,000 acre wheat farm out there. Wheat and cattle, and quite honestly, when I was growing up, we didn't worry about open space. I was 20 miles out in the country surrounded by square miles of farm ground. So when I moved down here to go to the university, and like so many people, I moved down here and I'm still here. So what I want to talk about is sort of the mechanics and some of the need. Gallatin County right now is the size of the state of Delaware. We've got 109,000 people. We're growing at the rate of 3% a year. To put that into perspective, we're putting about 10 people a day somewhere in Gallatin County, or on a yearly basis, we're putting the town of Three Forks and the town of Manhattan every year somewhere in the county. Most of those are going inside of the five incorporated city, Bozeman, Belgrade, Manhattan, Three Forks, and West Yellowstone. That's where most of the growth is. But as we all know, there's some happening out in the unincorporated spots too. So if you take that and you look at Belgrade and Manhattan, or Three Forks and Manhattan, times 15 years, times 50 years, times 100 years, you begin to see that it won't take long before some of this valuable ag ground is going to be eaten up by development. That's the goal of the open space levy that we're looking at. The open space lands program is to try to preserve some of that, to make sure that our culture and our heritage and our way of life and the things that I really appreciate about this valley, this county, are maintained for our children and our grandchildren. So I'm kind of passionate about the open space too. Sort of the mechanics of how this works, Gallatin Valley Land Trust, Trust for Public Lands, any of the organizations that are in the conservation easement business, begin to prepare a preliminary report of projects they're working on. Gallatin County has got what we call the Open Lands Board, and they bring that preliminary project to the Open Lands Board. The Open Lands Board evaluates it, makes sure it sort of fits into the criteria that we're looking for. It comes to the commission after that. The Open Lands Board is an advisory board. It comes to the commission, and the commission then says, yes, we'll give it a preliminary approval. This is something that we want to pursue. At that point, the conservation groups go back and work with the landowner and bring forward the completed project. It again is reviewed by the Open Lands Board to make sure that this project is still the kind of project that we're looking for. It comes forward to the commission. And at that point, we approve it and we dedicate the open lands money not only to, as Brendan said, to the administrative costs, but sometimes matching funds for other programs that are out there to help make this happen. There's a nice chunk of ground up north of Belgrade, out in the Amsterdam Churchill area. Of course, the very key ones out here on the pass, there's another nice one up in the Sedan area. If you're familiar with Sedan, there's some nice projects happening up there. So this year on the ballot, this primary, a request to have you vote to approve the open space lands levy. We need to make some distinctions here. Earlier in 2000 and 2004, they were bonds. They were two $10 million bonds. There's an interesting thing that happens when you do a bond. It's sort of like borrowing money, essentially what it is. So you begin to pay interest and administration fees on that bond. So the two $10 million bonds, $20 million, by the time we pay those off, we will have actually paid close to $33 million by the time we do interest and administrative fees. We felt as a commission that we could get more bang for our buck if we did a levy. A levy is something that is on your tax bill every year. We're asking for 4.5 mils. That 4.5 mils will fund this on a year-to-year basis. We sort of cash flow it. We don't have to borrow the money. We're dedicating a certain amount of our taxes every year to go to the open space. So we're asking for a 15-year levy at 4.5 mils, and that will create, if it's all projections, because who knows what the mill value is going to be in 15 years, but at a 3% growth, which is sort of historically been, over the course of 15 years, we'll have approximately $21 million in the open space levy to help finance these open spaces. We all know that the land prices are going up, and so these, quite realistically, we expect these conservation easements to cost more as we go, just because nothing ever seems to go down in price. Also, I need to say that 0.5 mil, and I said it was a 4.5 mil levy, 0.5 mil, the commission has dedicated to the regional park. When that park was purchased, it sat out in the middle of nowhere. Quite honestly, the commissions in the past have not put a lot of money into that park. Now, when you drive by and you see the development that's out there, it's become a park that is very actively used, and we're going to put some money into that to the tune of about $150,000 a year. We don't have our mill values right now, but it appears 1 mil in Gallatin County this year will generate close to $300,000. So a 0.5 mil is about $150,000 that we'll be able to put into capital improvements into the park. And then the 4 mils, which would be about $1.2 million per year, will be dedicated to the open lands as well as some trail projects. So We're really looking forward to being able to do that. The regional park, it's on Oak and Ferguson, right over in the northwest corner of the city of Bozeman. We also have a park up in Big Sky. Some of those funds will go there for the capital improvements on that as well. In a nutshell, that's what happens. It's reviewed by the Open Lands Board for final approval. It comes to the county commission for final approval of the conservation easement project, and then the commission gives a final approval on that. I don't believe we've ever turned one down, because by the time they get to us, they are a marvelous project. You can see the kind of projects we've had. All of them are marvelous projects. I'm a firm believer in open space. I've come from agriculture. I can see the value to agriculture in this. And like the signs say, we have to take the long view, right? Will we see a change today? We'll see a bit of a change, but in 50 years or 100 years, when our children and grandchildren are here, we'll begin to really look and be able to see the value of preserving this open space for our culture, for our traditions, for our lifestyles that we enjoy now, that our children and grandchildren will be able to enjoy when they live here. I'm a politician. I can talk for a long time. So should we open it up for questions?
Other 4-mil levy, is any of that set up for parkland or publicly accessible and was used for the Intergate Park?
We don't have any projects out there right now. The 1/2 mil will be used for improvements. But we don't have any parkland purchases lined up right now for anything like that.
Is
so
that allowed, though?
It would be allowed, most certainly.
Okay.
Most certainly.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
So the difference between a levy and a bond is the bond you have available right away,
mm-hmm.
whereas the levy is available each year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as the valley is growing, it seems to me that it's going to be really important for our conservation organizations to be able to buy up land as comes available.
Mm-hmm.
So if we only have a limited amount of money each year, mm-hmm. what, in a practical way, what are the conservation organizations going to do if there's no money available for this particular, I mean, I've got 50,000 acres I'm willing to turn over, but
there's options on that. Typically, over the life of the $20 million bond that we had had earlier, it was spent at the rate of $920,000 a year. We're now putting, at this point, $1.2 million as the valuations in our mills go up, the value of our mill goes up, those dollars will go up as well. The other thing is, if there is a big project that comes forward, the county can borrow up to $2 million without going to the voters. The county could borrow $2 million and then dedicate part of that mill, part of that mill levy for the open space to pay that back.
What's the homeowner cost of 4.5 mils? Say if you have $300.
Okay, and EJ is going to have to help me out here. You have to understand that it's not the value of your house, it is the taxable value of your house, which is somewhat less. And for a $200,000 house, it is?
$12.
$12.
$12.16.
$12.16.
A year.
Yeah.
But that's for
4.5.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not just
a 4. You know, I understand the criteria you all have used. It seems to make good sense, but it takes two to tango here. And so I guess my question is, how do you deal with the circumstance where you've got a willing landowner who wants to dedicate his property to conservation easement, but it's not kind of high on your list? How do you make a decision about when to expend resources, for a, quote, mediocre piece of property versus holding out to spend those resources on another piece of property that you think might have more conservation value?
We try to make it work for any project that we think is worthy and has the merit, but we have a pretty detailed set of ranking criteria of our own that we use to evaluate projects. It's always hard because it is a willing landowner thing, and there's some landowners who are not interested in this program at all, although some of them may own some of the best conservation land out there. So it's a little bit of like taking advantage of opportunities when they present themselves, and if there's sort of multiple opportunities, we use our ranking criteria to help us with projects. We have a good internal process we use. We know, the Open Gallatin County program, There's also other programs out there that fit different types of lands. There's the North American Wetland Conservation Act, which is a wetland wildlife habitat focused funding program that we know fits certain properties. So if those properties are willing, then we can sort of tap into those. There's some programs through the NRCS that prioritize prime farmlands. So, you know, there's this whole sort of matrix out there of possible opportunities, and if we have lands that we think have the merit and are ready to go, we try to like plug those into where the best fit is and try to get what we can get done.
The Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is another funding program that exists that is funded through royalties from offshore oil drilling, and is always kind of not sure whether it's going to pass or not, and it's up for renewal again. And so that program's used a lot for purchasing private lands that then go to federal land. And so a great example is another one up on Chestnut Mountain. There was an inholding there of, you know, a section of land that was an inholding in the forest, and some of that funding was used to purchase that from a willing landowner and put that into public ownership, and it's adjacent to those easements and a trail. And so that's one use of the LWCF program. And then another one is the county actually just applied for another LWCF grant through the state program that helps to fund parkland improvements and those kinds of projects. It's a smaller pool, but it's also really important and has been used for, the regional park has had one, some other, I think, sites around the county that have used that program as well. So it's sort of like just another great option that exists for parkland and trail projects. It's been a really successful program in Montana, and I think this week actually a lot of these Montana projects are being profiled at the national level to show how that program is used and how successful it's been here in hopes of getting support.
Question about how the conservation easements work legally. You talked about extinguishing development rights. Are they actually lost in perpetuity, or do they belong to some entity that promises not to develop it, or is there any way that could ever be purchased back by anybody?
They're really just through the easement, they're pretty much extinguished in perpetuity. They're not really held so much by anybody. They really don't exist anymore. So they can't be purchased back. And easements are perpetual. Not all of them, but almost all of them are perpetual ones. It's based in our legal system and our legal contracts. The bottom line is they're gone from that property and can't be restored.
So the next question is, That's if everybody's operating in good faith. What mechanisms are there to protect anyone who violates the easement?
That responsibility is with the land trust, and that is part of the conservation easement process. The landowners are granting us the development rights or real property interest in their properties. And our legal responsibility as a land trust is to monitor that conservation easement and enforce the terms of that easement in perpetuity. And so what that means on the ground is every year we go out and visit every single easement property that we have, and we talk to the landowners, and we make sure that what they're doing out there meets the terms of the easement deed. And so we have a staff that's dedicated to doing that, and we also have a stewardship fund, which is an endowment fund that we have that we take a conservative draw off every year. But we have it set aside only for the monitoring purposes alone, so that we can do our best to be around in perpetuity to make sure that we are out there monitoring and enforcing those easements every
year. The large purple section, is that a number of different easements?
Yeah, so GBLT holds 104 individual conservation easements. I can't off the top of my head think about how many easements there are in the whole county.
But it was a way of putting together several so that they're all connected and everything.
And those have and those happen to be large properties up in that part of the county, and there are some other large properties up there. Some in other areas, just the way that agriculture developed and ownership developed, it's piecing together smaller properties. But those are some of our biggest properties in the county.
Is there a limit on, like, is 5 acres too small? Are you going for a certain acreage? Or if there's 5 acres in a really high data-driven area, would you do a 5-acre one? And then, Don, I also have a question for you, is do you think that this, what's your sense of the open space levy is going to pass?
So to your first question, there's no, like, bottom limit to the size of an easement. If, you know, there was a 5-acre easement that had some really special habitat feature Or like public access is another good way to look at that. If it connected to public land and was a public access trail or something, those properties might be considered for an easement at that size. For us, it's balancing our GVLT's resources. These projects take a lot of time and a lot of investment. And if we're applying for funding and things like that, it's a big investment. And then also the perpetual investment of having to monitor these easements. So we want to make sure that we're spending our time and dollars wisely. And so we look for projects that have more resource values, which are typically larger in size. And then when we get into some of the, you know, partnering with the county through the Open Lands Program and the NRCS, they do have some properties rank higher if they're bigger and have more of those resource values. So we don't really have a cutoff, but, you know, rule of thumbs are, you know, bigger properties rank higher usually.
What's one of those very smallish?
So, I mean, some of those are fairly large. I mean, this is one we're working on now. That's 550 acres, and that one was closed in December. That one's 530 acres. So those are pretty big properties, really. There are some smaller ones, like that one has this really amazing spring on it that feeds this whole, like, creek system and had the potential of, it was a house site, really. And so there was a risk of a house getting put there and having the septic and the well impact that spring. And so that was only like an 11 acre easement, but because it had that unique value on it and it didn't require funding to get it done, we thought it was worthwhile to do.
I'm cautiously optimistic. That said, I a long time ago tried to quit outguessing the voters. But I'm cautiously optimistic. I think there's good things happening out there.
Let's say if this passes or if it doesn't pass, during the 15 years that this mill levy will be in effect, can the voters choose to approve another mill levy for the same sort of conservation?
Certainly.
So yep. Anytime, and the commission has to sign off.
Yeah.
But is your sense that the commission would be regard that with favor?
This commission, I think, if it determined that there was more demand than what than we had capacity for, I think this commission would certainly relook at it. The difference also between a bond and a levy is for a bond, all three commissioners have to sign off on it, vote to put it on the ballot. With a levy, only two do.
Does the county planning efforts, you know, when you look down 5-10 years, do you take this kind of data in, you know, if somebody wants to build a subdivision in a high riparian area, do you say, gee, we'd rather you didn't do that, or do you allow them to do it while septic and everything?
I appreciate the question, but it's long and involved. We are what's called a general powers government, and we are only allowed to do things that the state allows us to do, different than the charter form of government, which is a whole nother animal. So basically, generally speaking, that if we have a set of subdivision regulations, and if it sort of builds a square, and if the subdivision meets all those regulations, we could say no, but we'd end up in court because they meet all the regulations. But that said, our growth policy, our subdivision regulations have got provisions in it to make sure that these things are mitigated so that setbacks and all that other stuff are mitigated. Not no because we don't want to. No because the regulations that we get from the state basically say we can't do that. The state regulations are pretty clear of what we can and can't do. And we've been shot down in court when we tried to do something different.
Large brown block in the corner there, I think that's the Pine D easement.
Yes.
And for comparison's sake, how big is that, and is it protected the same way as all these other easements?
It is big.
312,000. And yes, it's protected. The Nature Conservancy holds the easement on that. It was donated by Ted Turner back in the 80s, I believe. If you drive through there nowadays, you could see how there'd be a lot of houses in there if it wasn't protected.
Brendan, do you reach out to developers to maybe earmark a certain portion of open land within a subdivision?
Yeah, I'd probably refer that to Don as far as what the regulations are for subdivision.
In subdivision, our subdivision regulations have rules as far as amount of open space and parkland inside of subdivisions, planned unit developments, cluster development, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that really happens inside of the subdivision regulations.
But is there any way to go beyond that sometimes to reach out? Maybe a developer would be willing to keep more open land within a subdivision?
Those requirements are only minimum, and so if a developer chooses to, and we have some that choose to put more parkland, more open space inside it, but they're just minimum requirements.
Would there be a way for the potential developer to, if not within the development plans itself, kind of donate a percentage to the open land concept in general?
I don't think Brendan or the county, if somebody wanted to donate money to the program, I don't think either one of us would say no.
No, but, I'm talking about a requirement.
Probably not a requirement.
Are you familiar with provisions currently that would allow for self-governing power for the county?
As far as if we wanted to go with a charter, that item that comes up on the ballot every 10 years where they can open up the government review and form a committee to see if the voters or citizens want to do that. That was last in, 16, I think? So it would be 26 before that opportunity came up again. In Montana, there are, other than the combined city counties, Butte, Silver Bow, Endicott, and Deer Lodge, there's only one other county that's chartered, and that would be Fergus County.
Is the landowner paid a lump sum when the easement is negotiated, or is money paid out over time?
Typically, there's a closing, like any sort of real estate closing, at the end of our whole due diligence process. And typically, the landowner gets paid at the closing, at which time that we all sign the easement deed, and then it gets recorded as well. So it's usually just a lump sum.
Generally, it's 50 to 75% of the value of the property. The landowner's getting about between 50 and 25% of the value, correct?
Yeah, generally, I mean, it ranges depending on the property, and it's not the value of the property, it's the value of the easement. So the easement has its own value, and it's equal to the development rights that are being given up. So it's not the whole value of the property. Typically, the easement value is typically between 25 and 50% of the fair market value of the property. And then of that, typically 25 to 50% of that can be brought through funding programs if the property qualifies, which is challenging. And then the remainder property value is donated by the landowner. They get a tax benefit that lasts a period of 16 years or until they use up whatever that easement value is. And there's a lot of landowners out there who fully donate the conservation easements as well. There is no funding that's brought to the table. And those are typically properties that don't qualify for these programs. A lot of the programs focus on prime farmlands or wetland habitat. And there's a lot of properties out there that don't really fit that. And the landowners can utilize the tax deductions, and it makes sense for them.
The statement was made that the county funds would be leveraged 5 to 1. Where does that 5 come from?
It comes from multiple sources. There are matching funding programs out there. So there's a government program, part of it, and then the landowner donation. So the landowners are donating a large proportion of their property value as well. So it comes from those additional programs that we use the county funds to match, and then the landowner is usually donating a pretty large percentage as well.
How much of the funding is federal?
On the properties that qualify for the federal programs, and again, they're really competitive and we compete statewide for those federal dollars. Right now, the federal programs match the county programs 2 to 1, and then in special circumstances, they can match up to 4 to 1 of the county dollars. So it's really a great leverage for the county dollars. And then again, the landowners are still usually donating a pretty significant portion.
And are the federal dollars staying the same, or do they fluctuate?
The total amount, it fluctuates. Montana has a really strong conservation program statewide. There's land trusts throughout the state who are all, I would say, very professional. And we have great projects and really amazing landowners who want to do these projects. And so over the last 3 years, we've been able, as statewide, the federal dollars that we've been able to bring into the state for conservation has been increasing dramatically, I would say. No promises it'll stay that way, but success sort of builds on success. And we have a lot of great projects. We have the state office for the NRCS here in Bozeman, and they come in and we're able to show them all the on-the-ground work, and so we have been pretty successful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the last Friday Forum of the Spring 2018 season held at the Bozeman Public Library, co-sponsored by Wonderlust, on May 18, 2018. Brendan Wiener, a program director of the Gallatin Valley Land Trust, and First District Gallatin County Commissioner Don Seifert discussed the Gallatin County Open Lands Program, a proposed 4.5 mil levy to continue funding this program is on your June ballot. To find out more about the work of the Gallatin Valley Land Trust, you can go to gvlt.org. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of KGVM's staff, its members, board of directors, or contributors. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, original recording by Steve Durbin, editing by Joy LeClaire, KGVM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio. Is dedicated to bringing news and information of interest to Gallatin County residents. To learn more about our new community radio station, go to kgvm.org. We welcome your suggestions, ideas, and input. KGVM, your audio mirror for Gallatin County. You are tuned to KGVM Bozeman. 95.9 FM, streaming on the web at kgvm.org. We thank you for listening and for your support. KGVM, Gallatin Valley Community Radio.